Blog Talk Radio.
Former Blackhawk, local guy, and the current color analyst for the Blackhawks on television, it is Eddie Olczyk.
The guy's an asshole. Dead air moments. Paid out the rectum.
Well, first of all, we're very, very happy with Dennis Savard as our head coach. He's growing.
What the fuck does that mean?
He's fat!
I don't know how long you guys got, but I can sit. I'll sit here till 4 in the morning and explain to you why James Wisniewski sucks.
You're never surprised by anything.
Make him humble.
There's a goal that everyone remembers. It was back in 72. We all squeezed the stick and we all pulled the trigger. And all I remember is sitting beside you. You said you didn't give a fuck about hockey. And I never saw someone say that before. You held my hand and we walked home the long way. You were loosening my grip from Bobby Orr.
You sound like a gay.
Give it to me.
Hey, look, those guys got better sperm than any of us got.
But I'm not cutting it anymore. I'm old news, and my new show sucks. Hi, I'm Chris Block. Nice to meet you.
Well, he's got sponsors, man. How, ain't that some shit? He's got a pizza place and a massage parlor. Either that or he's in the mafia, and the mafia is all about pizzerias and massage parlors. We'll see if his next sponsor is a waste management company.
I'm at the United Center 42 times this year. My picture's it's on the website. It's in the Committed Indian. You could go. I'll make you my Facebook friend. Come find me, pal.
This is the type of show you get when, you know, the Blackhawks aren't doing anything stupid in the off season.
Let me hear you say absolutely.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
Yeah. Well, don't okay.
Jeez, I'm an idiot.
Bunch of fucks.
We're men, okay? That means a few things. We like to shit with the door open. We talk about pussy. We go on riverboat gambling trips. We make our own beef jerky. That's what we do.
All right, superstar. You know, I'm getting a lot of flack on the internet about trying to make your nuptials weekend and your bachelor party extravaganza. They're trying to make it, according to the people on the internet that are criticizing me, they're trying to say that I'm trying to make it all about myself. I would tend to disagree. But like, what has the reaction been there on the home front?
You know, luckily there hasn't been any.
Oh, okay, good. So they wouldn't agree with these cream pies on the internet that are crying over me being a little self-centered.
Well, no, I mean, I haven't gotten any flack, so, you know, I don't know, man.
But you know that you should have scheduled the wedding a weekend, probably in September, when it wouldn't conflict with regular season NHL hockey, right?
Right. I mean, you know, I'm apologizing to you for not considering your needs. When scheduling things for 25 to 30 people.
Superstar, you usually do consider and from time to time meet my needs, you know. But, I mean, in this case, I mean, the one that really bothers me, I got to tell you, is the whole Soundgarden, Lollapalooza, bachelor party thing. Because that one really could have been avoided.
Yeah, yeah. Obviously, we didn't have the whole Lollapalooza thing in mind. And or, the Soundgarden was going to be headlining.
Well, I could have told you that. I have the inside scoop on that one. Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to another edition of The Third Man in Radio. I am Chris Block, the writer, editor, and sometimes visitor to thethirdmanin.com. And
if you demoted yourself to visitor on your own website.
Yeah. I will no longer, well, we might get into that a little bit later. But, yeah, at the current moment, yeah, I'm just a visitor. I take no responsibility. I will accept no blame to what goes on there. But it is The Third Man In Radio here on blogtalkradio.com/The Third Man In here on this Monday night, April the 19th, 2010. It is 8:05 here in Chicago. Alongside me, the Deacon of Distortion, it is the Superstar. How are you doing tonight, Superstar?
I am well. Yourself?
I'm doing great. I really am. And we got a lot to talk about tonight, and probably all of it is going to have to do with Chicago Blackhawk playoff hockey. A lot of angst, a little bit of nervousness after the game on Friday night. The Blackhawks didn't do particularly well in that game. Actually, they did very well for two periods, and then the third period was pretty much a disaster. But losing at 4-1 Friday night to the Nashville Predators, then they come back last night and they basically stymied the Nashville Predators. Didn't really do much of anything. Couldn't get anything going offensively. Take a 2-0 shutout. And tomorrow night in Nashville at the Bridgestone Arena, formerly the Somme Center, formerly the Gaylord Entertainment Center, formerly the Nashville Arena, game three. I'm sure I'm missing a and someone will email me shortly. I'm sure I'm missing something that it was called. But, yeah, it was all those things. But I don't know, what were your impressions of the weekend in Chicago Blackhawk playoff hockey?
And like I was mentioning before we jumped on, I was not able to watch game one. I had some family things I needed to attend to. Game two, and from everything I heard about game one, was a lot of the same. And the thing that kind of stuck out in my head more than anything, how great has Nashville been at forcing turnovers in the Blackhawks defensive end?
Well, go ahead.
Well, it just seems that the trap/non-trap system that they're running has created havoc. And obviously not having Brian Campbell, who's kind of the quarterback back there as far as bringing the puck up, starting the rush, hurts. But at the same time, we better get this figured out. We better get it figured out in a hurry.
Let me tell everybody what happened, right? Okay. Now, what the Nashville Predators are doing, if you want to call it a trap, okay, fine. Go ahead and call it a trap. But all they're really doing is sticking a bunch of guys in the neutral zone. They can't hold anybody. They can't. They can't put a stick on you and go sledding. And that was what the trap was. I mean, it was not only clogging up and clouding that neutral zone, but it was also grabbing on the guys and not letting them go anywhere. That was, more or less how the trap really was, successful for a lot of teams, was the ability to, when a guy dumped the puck in, grab him, pin them up against the boards and, basically stymie any sort of momentum that particular forward get going into the zone to take care of the puck or try to get back possession. I don't think what Nashville's doing is anything different than what a lot of teams do. In fact, it's no different than what the Blackhawks did last night. If you really watch what the Blackhawks were doing last night, if you go back and you watch certain games down the stretch, specifically after Brian Campbell was out, the shutout in L.A. the night after Brent Seabrook got hit by James Wisniewski, that was exactly what the Blackhawks were doing that game. L.A. got no chances whatsoever, and you know the Blackhawks shut him out. And it was a long, boring, sort of nothing happening game, but the Blackhawks shut them out. Same thing happened a week later when the Blackhawks rematched the Phoenix Coyotes here at the United Center. Same thing. If you go back and watch those games, what the Nashville Predators are doing is exactly what the Blackhawks were doing on those nights. The difference is the Blackhawks have two steps above as far as talent, and, you know, offensively and speed as well. So, you know, the Blackhawks can transition from that to offense a lot quicker than the Nashville Predators can. You know, so it's like if you wanna hop on the bandwagon of chastising the Predators or saying the only chance they have is by, you know, playing this boring style, it's like, well, did you watch what the Blackhawks did last night? Because it's basically what they did. And it worked for them. You know, but I don't know. We talked about last week. I wrote about it last week as well in a couple of places. I expected that the Predators would come up and take an early lead in this series, whether it be 1-0 or 2-1. And I think that it's going to take the Blackhawks a while to get going. It's going to take them a while to get to Pekka-Rinne. But once they do, I suspect that they're going to take off. I still think that Nashville's going to win a game in their home, you know, in their home arena. This series is going six. The way that this series is shaking out right now, I still see Nashville coming out, you know, with a victory tomorrow night. It may take overtime, but I see them winning tomorrow night in their arena. And then I see the Blackhawks taking the rest of the series. I don't think this goes seven. I think once the Blackhawks get going, they get confidence, and then they figure out that they, you know, how to win these games, they'll have no problem at all with the Predators. But the Predators will – these games will be tight. They will be tough, you know. I mean, going back to Monday night – or Monday night, going back to Friday night at the United Center, the Blackhawks really had – I mean, they had that game in hand. I mean, that was – not only did they have a 1-0 lead, but they were controlling that game. The only reason why the Predators weren't down 4-0 in that third period, going into that third period, was because of Pekka-Rinne. Pekka-Rinne made at least two unbelievable saves, you know, that would have been a goal on most every other goaltender right now in that first period. And in the second period, he was very good as well. In the third period, the Blackhawks looked like a team – that weren't convinced that they could be beat. They coasted through that period. They didn't play like they wanted to win that game. They played like they expected to win that game. And the difference was last night in the third period, they didn't – it's not – I think taking your foot off the gas is a wrong expression, especially the way the Blackhawks played that game and they approached it. But last night, to me, they understood what, you know, what it was going to take to beat the Predators, and they went out and they did it. They were a little bit grittier, and they played with more purpose in that third period, and they preserved the shutout. Antti Niemi didn't have to make more than two good saves that whole game. The fact that he got the first star, it's like, well, you know, you got a bunch of people up in the press box or whoever's going to vote, and it's hard not to give the goalie on the home team, on his home, you know, gets a shutout. It's hard not to give him that. But I didn't see him as the first star of that game. You know, whatever. But it was a team shutout, and he didn't really have to be any good. You know, we still have to see in this series, like, is Antti Niemi ready? He hasn't been tested to me much at all. So he's gonna get tested in Nashville. You know, and Nashville's been a tough place. You know, historically, it's been a tough place for the Blackhawks to play. They have not had a ton of success there. So it's going to be interesting to see what happens in these next two games and just how Antti Niemi responds to, like, we've seen this before. I mean, this is the pattern of Niemi down the stretch. He has a couple of good games, he gets a shutout, or he'll look spectacular, and then the next game he comes out and he gives up four or five. Superstar, do you think you see that pattern continuing? Or are the Blackhawks, while Brian Campbell's out, I mean, do you see them, like they did last night, clamping down, mimicking what Nashville's doing, and just taking over when Nashville makes the mistakes and the Blackhawks just have better offensive players? Do you see them going with that? Or, I mean,
I don't know. I don't know if I see them going to that. I think that's going to be a mid-game adjustment if they have to do that. I think this, like you mentioned, the Hawks are so far superior talent-wise in this team. We talked about this from the very get-go of the season. Regardless who's in net, this is a team that's going to have to win more of their games, 5-4, 6-4. The issue is they're not scoring 6 goals, 5 goals, even 4 goals against this team with the system they're going against. They need to adjust to it, try to get out to a lead. But, yeah, I mean, I think Niemi's due to give up 4 or 5 one of these 2 games, especially on the road.
Before we go any further, I do want to say next week on the show, now, this is tentative because if the Blackhawks take care of the series in 5, that would end the series on Saturday, and I would think that we would probably want to do a show on Sunday or Monday. If there's a game on Monday night, then we have to do Tuesday. And, you know, so, I mean, it's kind of tentative, but as of right now, we're gonna stick with Block's prediction, and we're going to say that there's going to be a Game 6, so we'll do radio next Tuesday night, probably at 9 o'clock or maybe a little bit later than that. We'll put it up on the website, or it'll be on Blog Talk. But next Tuesday night, tentatively, of course, it could move a little bit further. We'll be talking about this series, and also, Superstar, next Tuesday night, or whenever the show happens, on the show, this is a big one. I know people have been waiting for this for a long time. The third man in gives suggestions on how John McDonough can do his job better.
I'm looking forward to it.
It's going to be a great show.
I'm looking forward to it because there's plenty of things. There's plenty of suggestions out there.
And also, before I go any further, now, the Hockey Night guys, if you've been following this along, we were supposed to do a show tomorrow. Now, I think there are a few people out there that might know this. If you've been listening to the show, you would as well. Tomorrow is April 20th.
Tomorrow is April 20th.
Now, to some people, that means something, depending on where you live, maybe a little illegal. It refers to something maybe a little illegal.
Mm-hmm.
Or, in the world of HockeyNight.com, that means dinner, dancing, and celebration because they did pass along a note, and they wanted me to remind everybody that in our listening audience, and again, they wanted to apologize that they couldn't do the show, but they wanted to remind our listening audience, now again, this isn't me, that tomorrow is Adolf Hitler's birthday, and, you know, I guess it's up to you if you want to celebrate that. I personally cannot, and I'm German. That's one of the German holidays that I sort of skip out on.
Yeah, I'm German as well, and I think I'll skip that one.
I will not be dinner. I will not be dinner and dancing tomorrow night. At least that I know.
No, Fork didn't invite you to go.
No, I will not. No, Forklift did not invite me to this special members only party. But I mean, you never know. I could get the late call. He could go to the pen, and then he could call Block and ask him. You know, you never know. This edition of the Third Man In Radio is brought to you by our fine sponsors. Of course, Chicago's Pizza and Pasta, voted the best pizza in Chicago. 5 locations across the Chicagoland area in the, you know, in Chicago. 3413 North Clark, 3006 North Sheffield, 1919 West Montrose, 4520 West Irving Park Road, and 3114 North Lincoln. Go to chicagos-pizza.com. You can order online, you can dine in, and they have delivery till 5 a.m. Superstar for those of you that like to stay up late.
What time do you normally get your order in?
4:45.
Shocking.
On my way home. But yeah, chicagos-pizza.com. The pizza is outstanding. They've got soups, they've got salads, they've got calzones, wraps, paninis. Baby back ribs, maybe, depending on the location, and desserts as well. And most of the places, if you dine in, I think actually all of them are BYOB. So check that out, chicagos-pizza.com. And also the Northern Illinois Inline Hockey League, starting up on June 3rd, leagues spanning. I've got a press release here. They've got... They've got youth leagues for 12 and under, 14 and under, 16 and under. They've got adult all over the gamut there, silver, bronze, and gold. They have 30 and over league. And also, they're going to be trying out a 5-on-5 ice hockey rules league. It is the Northern Illinois Inline Hockey League. For more information, go to NIHLinlinehockey.com. All right, superstar. So we want to talk about games 1 and 2 for a second here. Okay. Now, in game one, I got a couple of things that particularly bothered me. Now, the first things first. The Antti Niemi goal. Now, you didn't see this, but okay. Antti Niemi gives up a brutal goal, a minute and a half into the third period. Right, JP Dumont's along the half wall. Your perspective, if you're looking at Antti Niemi, it would be the right circle, top of the right circle on the half wall. He just sort of shovels a puck in the direction of Antti Niemi. It gets a piece of Duncan Keith's stick, two hops, and Niemi just whiffs on it, and it goes past his right arm, right underneath it, into the net. Well, you know, tie game, 1-1. Pretty demoralizing goal, correct?
Yeah, I would. For not seeing it, yeah, that sounds like a pretty demoralizing goal.
Okay, as long as you agree.
Yeah, I mean, if you're up 5-1 or 5-0 at that point, not a big deal. 1-0, game one of the playoffs.
Yeah. 2 minutes later, the great David Boland, right? The Blackhawks' second line center, in theory, right? He was their third line center last year. Since the Blackhawks didn't really have a second line center, they had no one to get Marty Havlat the puck. And really getting Marty Havlat, what involved getting Marty Havlat the puck is the same thing as getting Patrick Kane the puck, is basically just give him the puck and get the F out of the way, right? Okay.
Pretty much, yeah. I mean,
okay. So Dave Boland had success on a line with Marty Havlat and Andrew Ladd on the left-hand side. It was one of the Blackhawks' better lines, most consistent lines for three quarters of the season. He goes, and in the evaluation process, the Blackhawks' brain trust at the time, Dale Talon and whatever level of authority that he had over these sort of things at the time, I don't know. But he was in the position, so it's going to be his fault. I have to blame him here tonight. But the brain trust of the Blackhawks evaluated and decided that because of that season, they were going to give him a 5-year contract at $3.4 million a year to be the Blackhawks' second-line center. Of course, Dave Boland comes into this season. Now, he's a scrawny person. I mean, this guy's got no muscle on him whatsoever. All right? And he's a guy that they've had trouble getting into the weight room and with any sort of consistency and getting weight on the man. Beginning of the year, he came into the season with back problems. He ended up having a very poor start, back surgery, comes back from the back surgery. As we talked about last week, played 26 games towards the end of the season. And, I mean, I don't know, but, I mean, he's playing more like a fourth-line center than he is a second-line center. And he played the last 2 weeks of the season with Patrick Kane on his right wing. I could score a goal every now and then with Patrick Kane on my right wing.
Yeah, having a guy like Patrick Kane on your wing generally would make you better, not worse.
But somehow...
But I don't know. I mean, that's just my opinion.
Yeah, but somehow, Dave Boland has managed to, there are people out there rooting for Dave Boland, and they know who they are, and I don't want to insult them. I mean, maybe I will at some point. But... I mean, they're rooting for Dave Boland. They want to see him do well. And of course, I mean, everybody, I want to see Dave Boland do well because, you know, I want to continue going to Blackhawks games in the spring. So I want to see him do well. But I'm also tired of waiting for him to do well. You know, I'm over the excuse that he's on the mend from an injury. That's no excuse anymore. Either, you know, 30 games in now, You're either healthy and able to play, or you're still injured and you need to get off the ice. You know, there's no more excuses. So, you know, this guy's got to start coming through. I know he scored a goal last night, all right? But, You know, and he's been uncharacteristically good in the faceoff circle the last or the first two games of this series. Typically, he's a 500 to below 500 faceoff guy. We talked about that before. Don't tell me how many you win. Tell me where you win them. He's been winning them. You know, I mean, almost all of them so far in the first two games of the series. That's great. But in game one, okay, the Blackhawks, Antti Niemi, you know, lets that bad goal in. He didn't read it well. It happens. I'm not going to get on Antti Niemi's case for that goal. It happens. All right? But I am going to get on Dave Bowen's case because 2 minutes later, okay, you got the Predators now have hope. The game's tied. They really had no hope in that game other than the fact that they felt like they could pretty much do no wrong because Pekka was going to stop everything. So they score on Antti Niemi with a bad goal. So, you know, when you're on the Predators bench or you're thinking about the Predators bench, now they're like, well, if that went in, what's going to go in next? I mean, how easy is it going to be for us to get to this guy now that he let that goal in? So 2 minutes after that J.P. Dumont goal goes in, what does Dave Bowen do? He goes and takes a stupid interference penalty. Now, this is par the course for Dave Bowen. And the same thing for Chris Burstig. Now, I plead to Stan Bowman in the offseason that when he sheds salary, and I know it's going to be tough because I'm not the only one that sees the crap that these two players spew on the ice on a nightly basis. I pray that these are the two guys that he sheds because I'm sick and tired of watching both play hockey. Dave Bowen is a waste of space right now. And he has to play better. Otherwise, the Blackhawks are going to need San Jose, Detroit, and Vancouver all to get knocked out of the playoffs in the first round because, you know, matchups-wise, the Blackhawks need strong second-line centers against those teams. Otherwise, they're going to get wasted if Dave Bowen continues to play the way he is right now. I know he scored last night. I don't care. It was a garbage goal, and that's the kind of goals that Dave Bowen's going to score on that line. He's going to be hanging back. You know, and we probably should talk about, like, one of the changes that Joe Quenneville made for – now, did you see these superstars, the changes that Joe Quenneville made for Game 2?
I did, both offensively and defensively.
All right, well, defensively, of course, everybody knows this by now, but it was Nicholas Halmerson and Brent Seabrook playing together, you know, on one pairing, and it was Duncan Keith and Dustin Byfuglien on another pairing, and then, of course, Jordan Hendry and Brent Sopel on third defensive pairing. Now, I know that one of the reasons why the decision was made, and I can't argue with it much, but Duncan Keith is going to play 25 to 30 minutes a night, you know, no matter what, no matter who he's skating with. So if he's skating with Dustin Byfuglien, that means that Dustin Byfuglien is going to get a lot of those shifts with Duncan Keith. And that's not necessarily the greatest idea. Agreed?
Agreed.
Okay. But you can substitute Brent Sopel for some of those. I mean, as a coach, you could, depending on the situation, where the faceoff is, you know, time in the game, you know, how many times Dustin Byfuglien's been out there recently, you know, you can judge him. Does he need some gas? You can manage that. Okay. It's not like just because you wrote it on the lineup card doesn't mean that you have to follow it, you know, unilaterally through the whole game. You don't have to do that. As a coach, you have the ability to do basically whatever you want, okay? But to me, stacking your first unit in the condition that your defense is right now, stacking your first unit with Keith and Seabrook, even though it's great to have them out there and they can control the game while they are, it means that they're going to have to play 30 minutes a night. And it means that Barry Trotz's group knows that those guys are going to play all the hard minutes, all the minutes against, you know, his top guys, and he can send people out there. You know, he can substitute a guy for Martin Erat, you know, like a Joel Ward or a Dustin Boyd. He can tell Dustin Boyd, we're going to dump the puck in, and I don't want you to come back to this bench until you take a piece of Duncan Keith. And he could do it all game long. And if Nashville does pick up a win down there in Music City this week, that's going to mean something going down, you know, through the rest of this series. If he's wearing down that defense, I just didn't. For me, it's great to have those guys out there, but it weakens your bottom six and your bottom or your bottom four, and your bottom four has to play some minutes. So, you know, as the opposing coach, to me, I can exploit that now. I think Joe Quenneville's opening himself up, specifically in Nashville, where Barry Trotz has the last change. He's opening himself up to some of these disasters where he's going to have bad matchups where Dustin Byfuglien gets caught out there. You know, and Jordan Henry's a nice guy. You know, he's a nice defenseman, but he's not Duncan Keith. You know, when you've got Hjalmarsson and Sopel together, his mobility is good, but Brent Sopel, you know, it's not so great. And as well as Brent Sopel's played this year, Hjalmarsson's, you know, given up the puck a lot lately. And Sopel can't, you know, he can't cover like Brent Seabrook can, you know. So to me, specifically going into Nashville, I if I was Joe Quenneville, I would go back to the way it was, you know, just because of that matchup thing. And Trotz is going to stay away from that. And then Joe Quenneville is going to spend all game switching D around, and you're going to get into situations where you're going to get caught with too many men. And you're going to get caught in a bad change because you're in a rush to get Dustin Byfuglien off the ice because, you know, Barry Trotz put Arnott, Wilson, and, you know, Erad or whoever, you know, out against him. So I don't like that move by Joe Quenneville. And it's something to keep in mind and watch that chess game and see. You know, see exactly how Barry Trotz, you know, approaches that down there at the Bridgestone Arena. But, yeah, I mean, to me, like, if, you know, what Dave Bolin's, you know, on that line now. So Dave Bolin gets, you know, he had Patrick Kane as a line mate for the final 2 weeks of the season. It was sort of Troy Brower on the other side because the first line that was put together with Hossa, Taves, and Sharp was performing, you know, very, very well together. But the problem is that Patrick Sharp is snake bit. Can't get anything to go in for him. So a good idea on, you know, and I'll say this for Joe Quenneville, you know, and I don't even know why he ever splits the two up, but Patrick Kane and Patrick Sharp, they just click. And every time they're out there, it seems like, I mean, not every time they're out there, but every night that they're together, good things happen. A lot of great chances go on. And why they aren't together just permanently, I don't know. But the fact that they're back together now, I see Patrick Sharp getting out of this slump here pretty soon, hopefully. Because, again, just like Dave Bolin needing to step up and play better and help those guys out offensively, but also just be better defensively. And get that, you know, help get that puck out of his zone because he wasn't doing that last night either. You know, Patrick Kane has to come down low and help out because Dave Bolin is just not getting it done. So that, again, playoffs, if Patrick Kane is coming down deep, and that's great that he is, but, that's part of Dave Bolin's job. So you're opening yourself up to, you know, Kane taking more of a beating than really he should if Dave Bolin was on his game. So, but Patrick Kane's got two goals in the series so far. Dave Bolin picked up the garbage. Patrick Kane has been involved in every goal in the series for the Blackhawks, anyway.
You know, that surprised me a little bit. Well, it doesn't surprise me that he's involved so much. It's unfortunate that he's been involved in every role because that just frankly means he's not scoring.
Well, he's been on the ice for all but one goal in period of the seven in the series so far. The only goal that he wasn't out there was for the first Dumont goal, the two-hopper that Antti Niemi missed. It's unfair to say that he was out there for the second Dumont goal because that was the Troy Brower giveaway when Troy Brower decided that in the Nashville Predator system where they clog up the neutral zone, that Troy Brower was sort of streaking up the left side. He had Dave Bolin was two strides to his side and ahead of him. It was an easy 5-foot pass to Dave Bolin. And instead, Troy Brower cuts to the middle, you know, to basically skate through four guys because Hossa was skating off for a change. And Kane hopped on for the change. But before, you know, before Troy Brower could even meet the Nashville, you know, foursome, because he had one trailing him hard, which was David Legwin, if just off the top of my head. It was David Legwin. David Legwin comes, takes the puck from him, and puts it on, and then Dumont picks up the goal. You know, I mean that was a terrible mistake on Troy Brower's part. But that's how close that game was on Monday. A lot of people, I heard so many people, and it really angered me, talk about how flat the Blackhawks were on Friday night, and it was a horrible performance and game, and they were flat and this and that, garbage. You know, it played very well, and they, you know, the only thing that you could accuse them of is just not, you know, not going to the net hard enough. I mean, they were forced to the outside, and they sort of, you know, they obliged the Predators basically by okay, we'll just shoot from out here then, or we'll pull up and we'll wait and we'll look for a chance. I mean, they have the guys, Hossa, Taves, you know, that, you know, to streak up the side and then try to force your way to the middle, you know, or go down deep into that zone and try to set up a cycle. I mean, they have the guys that do, you know, they can do it. Or get down there and have guys charge the net and bring all sorts of traffic to the net and then work that puck to the net and see, you know, just see it bouncing around. Again, Rene's going to stop every first shot he sees. That's just the way it looks right now. So what are you going to score on? You're going to score like Dave Bolin did last night. You're going to score on garbage in front of the net, second and third chances, a guy coming late, not being picked up. You know, that's the way you're going to score on Pecorine, it looks like, for the remainder of the series.
As you touched on, he has not given a lot of garbage up. So you better capitalize when it is out there.
But you've got to create, I mean, that's the other thing, though. You've got to create garbage. I mean, if
agreed.
You know, if you're just gonna streak up the side, you know, make a quick cut, throw one on net, and he's got Shea Weber and Ryan Suterstand in front of him, and no red jerseys or Nashville white jerseys. That, you know, I mean, he's even if he gives something up, they're going to clear it right away, or they're going to give it right back to him, and he's going to freeze it. You've got to create your own chances. That's on the Blackhawks. You know, you can't expect. I mean, I guess you can. I mean, Niemi was better last night. We'll give it to him. But you can expect that Anthony Niemi's going to give up a lot of rebounds. Right now, you can't. I mean, you can never expect the opposing goalie to just give up, you know, give you second chance opportunities. You've got to make them, and that's what the Blackhawks have to continue to do more of. For those listening with us live, I guess we could do a little. The Washington Capitals tonight, a lot of people were very worried about the Capitals and basically counting them out of postseason already. They're up 4-1 on Montreal late in the third period. Boyd Gordon, Brooks Leitch, Eric Fair, and Alexander Ovechkin, all in the second period. Thomas Plekanec scored on the power play in the third period. It's 4-1 right now with about 3 minutes left in the third. A final, and oh boy, superstar. My predictions just aren't really working out so well. I got the Blackhawks okay, but my predictions aren't not so hot.
Boston, I'm not. I'm with you on this one.
Boston defeated the Buffalo Sabres tonight in the TD Bank Memorial Garden, 2-1, on the back of Dennis Wiedemann and Patrice Bergeron goals. Patrice Bergeron was the game winner in the third. Mike Greer with the only goal for Buffalo. So Boston takes a 2-1 lead with game four coming up in Boston in two nights. And of course,
go ahead. I'm sorry.
Okay. Well, later on tonight, 9:00, big one. This series has been terrific so far. Los Angeles hosting the Vancouver Canucks. If you recall, it was a few Thursday nights ago that Los Angeles defeated Vancouver in the Staples Center 8-3, and Alain Vigneault left Roberto Luongo in for all eight of those goals. So That's the Canucks' last memory of Staples Center. Go ahead.
I'm going to mention in that Buffalo-Boston game, I don't know if you caught any of the third period, more so later in that third period, but that third period got chippy. It was a pretty ugly period. I didn't catch most of the first two periods, but that third period was ugly. It was some nasty playoff hockey there.
No, I didn't see it. I'm in the Third Man In Studios tonight, and the Third Man In Studios does not get verses. So.
Got to upgrade that. Maybe if you were more than a visitor to your own website.
I prefer visitor status, actually. All right, so let's quickly go down. One of the things that the Blackhawks, of course, are going to have to improve on. Last night they finally get a power play goal, and it was that Dave Bolin goal. And I will say, and I talked to a lot of people yesterday and today about this, because I wrote about it in the Committed Indian yesterday, about the first power play unit that the Blackhawks are trying out there last night, and I suppose going forward, since the unit that I'm about to complain about is the unit that scored. On the point is Dustin Byfuglien and Dave Bolin. Now, didn't we go through this all last season with the Blackhawks power play underperforming, and it was actually the second unit that did a lot of damage, but the first unit had Dave Bolin running the power play from the point. Didn't we go through this all last year?
Yeah, I don't remember it ending very well.
No, I mean, I understand from a coach's perspective that, you know, this power play is just absolutely horse crap right now. I mean, since Brian Campbell went down, I had the stat yesterday. I think it's four goals out of their last, before last night's game, four goals out of their last 50 opportunities. So now they're 5 for 55 since Brian Campbell went down. It's like 8%.
Yeah, you got to be a lot better if you're going to go anywhere in these playoffs.
So, you know, I understand his frustration, and you know, it's like, okay, well, let's try something different. But here's my thing, okay? And we might talk about, I don't think we'll have time. We'll probably talk about it next week. But, okay, everybody in Chicago, and understandably, because he's their guy, all right, but a lot of people nationally, because they picked up, you know, the Duncan Keith hype as you know, with each time the Blackhawks rolled through town, because it was a priority, and it should be for the Blackhawks to push that agenda in each city that they're in. But Duncan Keith is probably going to win the Norris Trophy this year. I don't know that he deserves it. I wouldn't call it bias, but watching him every night and dissecting his game, I can't make that vote. I just can't make it. And Joe Quenneville makes it easier for me not to make it, because Joe Quenneville can't put his $8 million supposedly Norris Trophy winner, or at least candidate, on the number one power play unit. He's their leading scorer amongst defensemen. You know, but he can't run the first power play. You know, he can't run a power play that has Taves, Sharp, and Kane. I mean, he can't run that power play.
Yeah, that seems a little crazy, because I think, I think you or I can run that power play.
So what that says to me is that Duncan Keith, watch L.A. tonight. Who runs their first power play?
That would be Drew Doughty.
Drew Doughty, okay? So, and offense isn't everything. It's the Norris Trophy. It's an all-around award. It's who is the best all-around defenseman. That's at least what it's supposed to be, okay? And we'll get in just a minute, we're going to get into what awards are supposed to be and what writers, both locally and nationally, make them. But, you know, to me, if he's your number one guy, and he's supposed to, you want to make him, individuals out there, because I'm not going to do it, want to make him the best defenseman in the world, then he should be able to run the first power play unit. And if it's his fault, is that what Joe Quenneville's saying? by not putting him on there. Okay, we're before last night, we're 4-for-50, and now we're 5-for-55 on the power play since Brian Campbell went down. Is it Duncan Keith's fault? I mean, because Duncan Keith was out there for a lot of that. And if that's the case, okay, because the Blackhawks only had two power plays on, you know, in game one. So if that's the case, then those four power play goals after Brian Campbell went down, and, you know, on, I don't know this for a fact, but an 8% power play, I'm guessing that's at the very near bottom of the league, if not the worst. Okay, then how can you name Duncan Keith the Norris Trophy winner if he was running an 8% power play for the last month of the season?
Yeah, you can't.
You can't.
You can't. That would,
I know
that
nobody wants to hear that. You know, and again, I'm very critical of Duncan Keith because, you know, just people are just handing things to him. And you, when a guy is that fast and he's that all over the place, it's easy to see that. It's easy to see his active stick. You know, he's a guy running around out there like he's got an IV stuck into him, feeding him amphetamine. And it's probably the wrong thing for me to say about NHL players during the playoffs. But that's what he looks like. Game one, he was all over the place. And it was not necessarily a good thing. Not all the time, anyway. But it's easy to see that, and you see him involved in all these different things. But if you really watch Duncan Keith's game, there's a few things that he's guilty of a lot. And the first and foremost, on the offensive blue line, he makes the wrong read a lot of times. He pinches at the wrong time. You know, especially when pucks are coming up along the half wall. I mean, he makes a bad read on that play a lot. I mean, that's one thing. He gets beat to the outside a lot more than a guy with his kind of skating ability should get beat to the outside. Because with his stick, his active stick, what he's taking away is the oncoming puck carrier cutting to the middle. He's pushing them to the outside, so he should know where the guy is going, but yet he still gets beat there a lot. So, again, he's very, very good, but he's not the second coming. Maybe, you know, he's improved every single year, so maybe next year he'll be in my, you know, I'll watch him and I'll be like, you know what, this is the year. And he'll probably get it this year just because of the hype, but I don't think he deserves it.
Yeah, right, I don't think he deserves it either.
All right, well, I guess since we're talking about it, I mean, Drew Doughty is probably the other main name out there, and it's kind of crazy to talk about a 20-year-old kid. I mean, but it's a totally different time now for defensemen, and that it's really all about skating ability. Now with these guys on the blue line and what you can do and jump up into the play and you can get yourself noticed by jumping up into the play, getting all these extra points and, you know, adding to the offense. That's how a lot of these guys get noticed. Mike Green is a great offensive player, but he's not so much on the other end. I can't ever consider him for the Norris Trophy. You know, I mean, if he puts up Bobby Orr like numbers, then okay, that's incredible. You know, if you're doing that, you know, you're scoring 40 goals and you got 100 points, then that's pretty out of this world. And then you got to figure the guy in, because I mean, there's nobody else doing that on the off, you know, coming from the blue line. I don't know that Mike Green can ever accomplish that, but that's when I think you could start, you know, just, you know, putting an all offensive defenseman into the Norris Trophy consideration. But I can't consider Mike Green. So to me, I watched a lot of LA Kings hockey this year, and I think Drew Doughty is a guy that has to be considered.
You know, I think he's the winner
next to Duncan Keith.
I think he wins it.
You really think? I mean, you really think? I mean, see, you talk about the whole East Coast bias thing. You really see an LA Kings defenseman winning the Norris Trophy?
It doesn't. It sounds absolutely ridiculous to think, but I do. And you know what? I think I'm as guilty of that, not East Coast bias, but not paying as much attention to the West Coast games or on late. Dude, man needs to work in the morning. But ever since the Olympics, you really start paying attention to this guy. And from that point forward, if he was anything like that beforehand, I saw him a couple times. Yeah, I think he wins it.
Well, I don't know. I mean, I know that the Vezina finals were announced today and the Norris were announced, I believe, on Friday. But I may have that wrong. But, yeah, I mean, to me, it comes down – it'll probably come down to Green because Green leads defensemen – all the NHL defensemen in points. He finished with 19 goals, 57 assists, and a plus 39. But he's also on a team that scored way more goals than anybody else. Now, Duncan Keith, 14 goals in comparison, two less assists than Mike Green, which is pretty impressive in itself for 69 points. So he has seven less points than Green, but he's only a plus 21. Green has 10 power play goals to Keith's 3, and Green has 4 game winning goals to Duncan Keith's 1. And Duncan Keith shoot, you know, he ended up with 8 more shots than Green, but Green also played 7 less games. Now, Doughty, in comparison, Doughty has 16 goals to Mike Green's 19 and Duncan Keith's 14, and only 59 points, Duncan Keith with 69, Green with 76. But Doughty's right there with Keith at a plus 20 on a team that scores less goals than the Blackhawks.
I think that's the most impressive stat of all those. Is those plus minuses for all 3 of the guys.
Yeah, so, you know, I mean, the only other guy I think to me that deserves serious consideration to be thrown in that threesome to me is Chris Pronger. Chris Pronger on a Flyer team that was very inconsistent all year was a rock. And you know, I know a lot of people don't like Chris Pronger, but Chris Pronger played quality hockey for the Flyers this year, and I think that he deserves just as much consideration as Mike Green because of it. Because Pronger's playing both ends of the ice. He's a stud on both ends of the ice, and he's still as physically dominant as he was 3 years ago. And, you know, the Flyers struggled. But he was the rock on that team, and if without Chris Pronger, the Flyers would have been really, really bad. I mean, you're talking about a team that really didn't have a goalie all year long. They had Ray Emery, but Ray Emery, you know, he wasn't impressive. And they went through all these different goalies, and Chris Pronger still finishes with 10 goals, 55 points, and a plus 22 on the Philadelphia Flyers. You know, a team that needed a shootout to get into the playoffs.
You're not going to get any arguments from me. I think Chris Pronger's been a beast all year.
Okay. I want to talk about let me go back to our sponsors here for just a second. Again, chicagospizza.com and NIHLinlinehockey.com. Visit those if you will for us, please. And then Pretty Girls Massage Spa, Superstar. Now, you know, Superstar.
Know it.
Girls Massage Spa. Yeah. 4906 West Irving Park Road in Chicago. What about one block west of Irving, Milwaukee, and Cicero on Irving Park Road, by the way. Phone number there to call is 773-545-9588 if you're in the area, or if you'd like to come from out of town and come on down and get yourself the Superstar treatment. Get yourself all rubbed up, maybe back into alignment, maybe a realignment. It is Pretty Girls Massage Spa. Again, 4906 West Irving Park Road, 773-545-9588. And also, Wednesday night, April 28th, 2010, at 9 p.m. at the Excalibur Vision Nightclub. It is the Chicago Sexpo. Now, this was something that I was not notified about, Superstar, until just recently. Over 3,000 people attended the Sexpo in 2009. Don't miss it this year. What is the Chicago Expo? Sexpo Expo, you may ask. It's Chicago's only adult entertainment trade show and exhibition, and it only happens on one night a year. There will be BDSM demonstrations. Now, what does that mean, Superstar? I've never heard of that
before. I have no fucking idea.
BDSM. Somebody Google that for me and email me. I don't know what the heck that means. I'm trying to work out that lettering in my head. What it was. BDSM. So I'm going to sit here and think about it until I figure it out.
Mr. Bergen, do you have a massive erection?
Also, pole dancing demonstrations, lingerie fashion shows, bikini fashion show, and contests. Now, I would like, now since we're advertising on the show, I wonder if they will contact me and ask me to be a judge at this special once-a-year event.
Yeah, you know, hey, advertising's free advertising.
I can be available on Wednesday night, April 28th. Easy. Now, I know that could be Game 7 at the United Center. I'm wrong. I've been wrong a lot about the schedule the Blackhawks are going on lately. I think I'm right on this one.
Well, no, the series isn't ending in 6.
Oh, it'll still end in 6, but in case Block ends up being wrong, that's never happened before, right?
Oh, no, not at all.
What happened last night in Colorado? Danny Boyle about gave me a heart attack last night.
That was pretty great. San Jose will sweep, and then they lose game one.
Once again, it's the Chicago Sexpo 2010. Go to ChicagoSexpo.com for more information. You're going to need tickets. No tickets are going to be sold at the door, so you need to go check out ChicagoSexpo.com. For all the ticket information, don't call me or email me asking for them because I don't have any. And unless I'm going to be judging the show, I don't know the kind of the thing that I would normally be interested in. Adult maid and hostess services, adult travel companies, adult hotel and spas, private swingers. Chicago's most popular dungeons and dominatrices will all be on hand. The Top Gentlemen's Club, Bachelor and Bachelorette party providers. Now, maybe we do need to go. ChicagoSexpo.com. All right, Superstar, we're going to talk.
I am free on Wednesday night.
You are a man that can be available on a Wednesday night. Got to love the sponsors. Thanks to the sponsors, I was having this conversation with somebody this week. Thanks to the sponsors, I can call myself a professional radio personality.
Well, you are a personality.
But now, because we got sponsors that are, you know, friends of the show, I'm a professional. I would never go around saying that, but if I wanted to, I could.
Congratulations.
Oh. You know, we haven't played with the switchboard in a while.
No, we haven't taken a caller in about 6 months either.
That's because Block doesn't look at the switchboard during the show. But, like, if somebody wants to call right now while I'm playing with the switchboard, don't worry about it. You know, I wonder what Dion Phaneuf's doing right now.
Have a go, I'll be in there for sloppy seconds!
God knows he's not playing hockey.
You ever go to Lashitz Inn on April 20th? We were completely unaware of it.
Yeah, right.
You know, this guy recently retired from all of professional wrestling, supposedly.
You asked me... Excellent question. Mickey Mumbin.
You know what? There's some, I don't know what this is. Some of these things are up here, but I really don't know what they are, so let's check this one out.
I don't know that it was misfortune. It wasn't my misfortune. I'm not the one that got bit.
I remember that.
We got Pootie Tang in the house tonight.
Pull my pants down a little bit and show them the Hockey Night logo. Oh, you know what? Check this out, Superstar. This is one of my favorite movies ever. I think it might be one of yours, too.
Hello, Peter. What's happening?
You know what?
Yeah, of course. On the streets.
Okay. I was just making sure. All right. While we're talking about NHL awards, I know it's going to be a while till this one's announced, and it's probably the one that's going to get the most debate out there. It is the Hart Trophy, which is, of course, given to the most valuable player in the NHL. The most valuable player. Okay. Now, there are the obvious names out there, and this is the issue that I have with this award this year. The obvious names that everybody comes up, because when I think, for the most part, when people think of the Hart Trophy, what do? They go to NHL.com, they go to the scoring leaders, and whatever the first three names are, those are the names that they go with, right?
Correct.
For the most part, the dopes that are out there will do that. Now, unfortunately, a lot of the people that are going to be voting on this award may or may not have dope-like tendencies. So we're here tonight to maybe shed a little light on the award.
I would love to.
Now, if you do go, okay, let's pretend we're dopes, right?
Okay.
For a second, right? for this segment of the show, Superstar and Block will pretend to be dopes.
Trying to pay the difference.
Yeah. This part of the show will sound much different than every other segment of the show that we've ever done. All right, so if you go and you look, now the three leading scorers in the NHL, Henrik Sedin with 112 points, Sidney Crosby with 51 goals and 109 points. Now, Henrik Sedin only had 29 goals. He was an assist machine, though, 83 assists. And he was also a plus 35 on the Vancouver Canucks. And then, of course, number three, the great Alexander Ovechkin, 50 goals, one less than Sidney Crosby. Also interesting, though, he had one more assist than Crosby, tied him for 109 points. Now, those are the three names that a lot of people are going with. Sedin, Crosby, Ovechkin. Okay? Now, we also have an interesting dilemma this year in that we have a couple of teams that had goalies that completely stood out above anybody else on their team as far as the focal point of the team, the team MVP, right?
Correct.
The two, of course, that we're alluding to, I'm sure pretty much everybody would know this, or this will sound very familiar to you in a second. In Buffalo, Ryan Miller, who gained much acclaim during the Olympics as he carried Team USA to a silver medal. And then, of course, in this guy's getting even more pub right now, for the fact that he's the goaltender of the series 2-1 series leading Phoenix Coyotes over the Detroit Red Wings. Of course, that's, will make him a hero here in Chicago. But Ilya Bryzgalov. Now, my thing here is Henrik Sedin has had an incredible year, because you also have to understand that Henrik Sedin did this, he's been attached to his brother's hip his whole career. Daniel Sedin. And up until this year, Daniel Sedin has kind of been regarded as the better player. But Henrik Sedin has had this amazing season. And I don't think you can take any of that away from him. Now, there is the argument, and it is a good argument, that a lot of Henrik Sedin's points, a lot of his assists are second assists. And there's an argument to be made that second assists sometimes you have to go back and look at them and see. A second assist can be the most important assist, depending on what that player did to advance the play. you know, or a second assist could just be, you know, hey, I gave the puck to someone, that guy made the incredible pass, and then there was a guy all alone with an open side for an easy goal. But, I mean, a second assist, it's a, you know, it's a good argument, but you also have to go back, and you can't just say, okay, well, this guy had so many second assists, and this guy had so many first assists, and, you know, you have to go back and look at him individually. It's not a black and white thing. But regardless, he's had a terrific season. If you watch the Vancouver Canucks play a lot, and I do, I think they're endlessly entertaining for many reasons, some good, some good, some bad. And you're getting all of them in this Kings series, which is why it's so entertaining to watch. But I think you have to include him in the threesome. The three finalists, Henrik Sedin has to be there. I just think it would be an injustice if he wasn't. Number two, excuse me, because he's the best player in the world. And I will fight this argument with anybody that tries to say not. He is the best player in the world. If you've watched him this year, if you've watched his whole career, he just, the guy has stepped it up a notch this year in every sense of his game. He is all over the place. He's been great. I can't say enough about him, and I know people don't like it because they've been hearing about him over and over and over again since he was 15 years old, you know, and 3 or 4 years away from the league. But it's the fact of the matter. The guy's the best player in the world. Sidney Crosby has to be a part of that. I mean, he's a guy that came in this year, and there's two things that he stepped up in, really three. I mean, the defensive aspect of his game, you know, he committed to that even more so. I mean, he's a guy that knew, probably because, you know, he lives with Mario Lemieux, and Mario told him, you know, time again, it's like, this is what you need to expect now that you are the champion. It's a whole different deal. So he came in and he approached it like that. He knew he had to be better, and he answered the challenge. He came in, he worked on his shot all summer long, and he came in and his shot was just devastating this year. Before, I mean, he was, you know, it was Malkin that was the finisher on the team, and Malkin still is a great finisher. But this year, Sid was taking care of business himself, and Malkin missed a bunch of time, and Crosby was, you know, scoring some unbelievable goals. He's still a great assist man, but he hasn't had a lot of help on that team this year. One, because Billy Guerin is a year older. Chris Kunitz is a year worse. You know, and Malkin was out a lot, and, you know, what, he plays with Maxime Talbot, and, you know, I mean, let's, you know, the Pittsburgh Penguins are a very good team when they're, you know, a great team when they're healthy, but Crosby sometimes is you know, he cuts the short end of the stick as far as the line combinations are concerned. But he's still been great. And faceoffs, he was leading the league in faceoffs most of the year, up there around 60%. He finished at 56, but still, I mean, I can't say enough about Crosby. Now, the third one that everyone just includes just because is Alexander Ovechkin. I got a problem with that. Alexander Ovechkin, when he got that suspension for the Brian Campbell hit, all right, in that game, okay, so let's just talk about in that game. So Chicago Blackhawks fans would know this. Once Alexander Ovechkin was no longer in the picture in that game, the Capitals got their act together and took over the hockey game. And in the next two games, they were lights out without Alexander Ovechkin. There were other periods of the season, he had the other suspension, that they do well without Alexander Ovechkin. What is the most valuable player award? It's the most valuable player. It's the player, when you take him off that team, the team is much worse off. Now, here's my argument. How you don't include one of the two goalies, Ryan Miller or Ilya Bryzgalov, I mean, I'm not saying you have to vote for one of those two, but how you don't include them in your final three, I can't take your vote seriously. Because if it wasn't for Bryzgalov, Phoenix, I don't know how bad Phoenix would be, but they'd be bad.
The same with Miller.
If yeah, if Buffalo, if not for Ryan Miller, you know who Buffalo's backup is? It's Patrick Laleem. Patrick Laleem won't have a job in hockey next year. Unless there's a GM out there that just really, really likes him, because he is a great guy, and he's fit into every locker room that he's ever been on, and, you know, he could play 15 games for you, but as we saw this year, I mean, every time he took the ice for Buffalo, it was uh-oh time. So I don't know how Laleem gets a job next year. So if it wasn't for Ryan Miller staying healthy and being in the net, I know Buffalo didn't finish that great. You know, the second half of the season, they weren't as good as they were the first half. So, you know, if you want to put Brizgalov in there above Miller, I can't argue with you. I flip-flopped on it as I've been thinking about it the last week. So I'll go Brizgalov too, just because he was steady all year long. But again, a lot of Phoenix's wins, we talked about this last week, a lot of Phoenix, the damage that they did was done in overtime and in the shootout, more than anything, the shootout. So, you know, but, I mean, they got the job done. So I would say, and we'll ask you here in a second, I say my final three are Sedin, Crosby, and Brizgalov. Now, what do you go?
Well, like you said, you can't argue with Sedin or Crosby. Crosby is the best player in the world. Not only is he the best player in the world, he makes everyone around him that much better. So I agree. Those two have to be in the argument. And the goalies, one of the two, should be in there. And I'll take Miller, because I think watching the Buffalo Sabres, they're just bad. I mean, this series is a prime example. They lose another 2-1 game today. What happens if Brian Miller isn't in that?
The argument there is that when you're flip-flopping, and like I was flip-flopping on Brizgalov or Miller, Buffalo plays a little, they have good defensemen in front of him, but they're playing a little bit more freewheeling style. There are a lot more... a lot more chances taken in Buffalo than there are in Phoenix, where they're a little bit more defensive minded. Just because offensively they don't really have the crew in front of him that can challenge teams offensively. They'll score their goals. You know, they're not going to score a lot of them, but they will score their goals. They have goal scoring by committee there, but they're very defensive aware, and Dave Tippett has done a great job coaching that team and implementing a system in front of Brizgalov to, you know, make a life a little bit easier for him. Now, he's still made all the saves, and he's still been terrific all year long. And MVP candidate, I'm flip-flopping on the Vezina. I don't know who to give it to. One day I lean to Miller, one day I lean to Brizgalov. For the sake of the show tonight and just, you know, coming to some sort of finality, I'll go Brizgalov for both of them. But I understand the argument with Miller, and I can make it myself, in that Miller sees a lot tougher, he sees a lot tougher shots. And the team in front of him, I don't think is as committed defensively as the Phoenix Coyotes now. Now, on the flip side, Brizgalov sees better competition in the West, slightly, I say. For the people that think that the West is so much better than the East, I don't see that being the case. There's a lot of really good hockey being played in the East right now, and it's a little bit different style of hockey. The West is still better, but not by a landslide. Come on, I mean, your defending Stanley Cup champions are an Eastern Conference team. You know, so the West isn't that great. So, to me, my MVP is still Sidney Crosby, just because I look at the season he had, and I was in awe of Sidney Crosby all year. Alexander Ovechkin is the more exciting player. When everyone wants to make have that discussion, no doubt, Ovechkin's the more exciting player. But look at what everybody's talking about him right now. It's like, Alex, is he committed to the team, right? You're talking about most valuable player to his team. And you've got a guy who everybody's questioning whether or not he's committed to the team. So how could you vote for him or have him in the finalists for most valuable to his team award? Like, how people could put that in there? I don't know. Like, what is your hockey acumen? You know, it's like there's writers out there, you know, that it's like they won't vote for the goalies. It's like they've made the MVP on, you know, in their own minds and their own voting cards, they've made the MVP a forward award. You know, you've got the Vezina goalie award, you've got the Norris of the defenseman award, and they've made the Hart Trophy a forward award. That's not what it is. It's the most valuable player. You take that player off his team, and the team is in rough, rough shape. That's what the award is. So just, you can't. It's just not like who are the top three scorers, and then I pick who I like the best. It's like, yes, Ovechkin can dominate hockey games. You know, but what is the problem? And I we talked about this last week when we made our picks. I predicted that the Capitals will skate the cup at the United Center, Game 6 of the finals. Okay, I expected them to have sort of this turmoil and these aches and pains early as they learn to sort of like it's not the whole team, you know, that's going to have these issues. As far as committing to defenses, there's a lot of guys on that team that play both ways, that are very apt to concentrate to both ends of the ice. But it's like that top line, or whatever line that Ovechkin skates on, there's got to be that commitment there. Those lines have to buy into the team concept too, buy into what the coach is selling. And the coach just can't say to Semin, Backstrom, and Ovechkin, the coach just can't say or stand idly by and let those guys do whatever they want, because then they're not going anywhere. But that's like that's the thing that they've got to figure out. They're more than capable of going all the way. You know, that team is very well balanced. The only thing that worries me about that team is just being too offensively orientated on the blue line and just not steady enough defensively. But again, somehow the Pittsburgh Penguins got away with winning a Stanley Cup with Hal Gill on their blue line. So, you know, it can be done. But there's veterans, there's character guys on that team. Brooks Leitch, Mike Knuble, Jason Chimera, Jeff Schultz on the blue line. He's a guy that no one ever talks about. He's a solid blue liner for them. Tom Pody's okay. You got Matt Bradley, Thomas Fleischman, Eric Fair. These are character guys that they have up front. You know, you also got Brendan Morris in there. He's okay. But Eric Belanger, you know, they're going to be fine. They just got to get that. They're a little suspect, just like the Blackhawks. They're going to score a lot of goals, and as long as they commit, the whole team buys into playing some defense. I don't see anybody in the East being able to hang with them in a 7-game series. Teams like Montreal give them a problem, but I just don't see where a team can endure that offense. I mean, the guys that I all just mentioned, they all score goals. When you talk about the Phoenix Coyotes have goal scoring by committee, the Capitals have it better than anybody in the league. You know, and they have, all three of their defensive combinations can help, you know, can aid in putting pucks in the net, you know, at a ridiculous rate. So, I don't know. But, all right, Superstar, let's look at getting out of here, I think.
All righty.
All right, so, next week, again, like we talked about, suggestions on how John McDonagh can do his job better.
Email him in.
Yes, actually, yes. Chris Block at thethirdmanin.com, thethirdmanin at sbcglobal.net, or just go to the website, contact us, and it'll go right to write to me if you have suggestions on how John McDonough can do his job better. I have a list that I'm going to go over with everybody next week. I think it's going to be terrific. I think John is going to personally come up to me at the United Center and have a talk with me after this list.
It may be good. It may be bad.
Now, I think he's going to appreciate this list. This is a great list. All ways that John McDonough can do his job better. Ideas on how to make the Blackhawks organization better and the presentation, just the way they do their jobs, I think they can be done better. And I've got a list here, and I think everybody's going to find it fascinating.
And, you know, I'm going to have a couple ideas on that. I'm going to concentrate on off-ice, all off-ice for me.
Oh, no, like John McDonough, I mean, if you believe John McDonough, he doesn't have anything to do with what goes on as far as on-ice decisions, right?
Right, well, exactly. That's why I'm with the off-ice. Cause I don't
that's,
know
why, that's why Dale Towne and Kim Janssen are in coffins somewhere.
Yeah, exactly.
Actually, you know what? Because a lot of people have asked me this question, and it was something that came up a few times at the United Center yesterday. I can confirm that Kim Janssen is, in fact, still among the breathing.
Oh, really?
Yes. He is still among the breathing. He is not dead. So let's put that rumor to an end. Kim Janssen
okay.
is still among the walking breathing.
Well, that's good for Kim Janssen.
I'd say so. Whether or not he plays again for the Blackhawks this year, that I have my doubts. he is still alive. So cheers to Kim Janssen. But, yes, and again, it's tentative, but we're looking at Game 6, the Blackhawks clinch down in Nashville, and then on Tuesday night, probably a tad bit later than we usually do, 9 o'clock or 9:30, Third Man in Radio, for those of you that listen live. For those of you who don't listen live, well, screw you. Nah, screw you. See, there again, I go offending the listeners.
Well, don't worry. There's only like three of them listening live.
I don't know. I didn't check last week. A couple weeks ago, it was actually a decent amount. But, yeah, so I guess that's it, Superstar. Thank you for joining us again on another fantastic edition of the Third Man in Radio.
Always my pleasure.
And it was mine as well. Again, as always, blogtalkradio.com/thethirdmanin. Thethirdmanin.com. I think we're going to see some activity there, Superstar, this week.
I'll be anxiously waiting.
Check it out. I will be visiting it as well because I'm interested to see what's going to go on at thethirdmanin.com this week. And join us again next week, Tuesday, the 27th of April, and anytime there after that. Or if the series ends on Saturday, we'll most likely tape Sunday or Monday. In fact, you probably count on that. Ways that John McDonough can do his job better. Also, we will give all of our Blackhawk and regular season NHL award winners, our finalists and our winners. Lots to talk about next week on the show. Superstar, say goodnight to the people.
Goodnight, people.
All right, everybody, thanks for joining us, and we'll talk to you next time.